The Sermon on the Mount, Lesson 2. Last time we introduced the sermon by reading the two prefatory verses, which go like this. Now, when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him. He began to teach them. We made just a couple of very simple points. One is that his going up on a mountain in some way parallels Moses' going up on the mountain for the law, the heart of the Old Testament. Here, Jesus is giving the gospel. And it's widely agreed that these chapters, Matthew 5, 6, and 7, contain the heart of Jesus' teaching. They're the most quoted from in the early Christian writings. They're passages that Christians would use to explain to critics or to outsiders, to Gentiles and to Jews, what Jesus taught. And so much of what is distinctive in his teaching is found in those chapters. Those are really important. I also noted that he sat down in the typical position, posture of a rabbi teaching his disciples. Well, we're going to be looking today at the first beatitude. Now, it's not only the first of the eight beatitudes of Matthew. It's the first of at least 20 beatitudes given to us in the New Testament by Jesus, and there are others as well, but just the ones from Jesus. We have the eight in Matthew. We have the four in Luke. Luke 6 has what is called the Sermon on the Plain, not the Sermon on the Mount. And then we've got one in Acts. You probably remember that one. It's more blessed to give than to receive. And then there's seven in the book of Revelation. It's possible that I've missed some, but my tally is 20. If we're trying to understand what he means by the being poor in spirit, several Old Testament passages can help us. And I would like to begin with one that's actually what Jesus read out when he began his public ministry in Nazareth. And we find this referred to in Luke 4, 18. But this is behind Jesus' teaching, his program. It's sometimes called the Nazareth Manifesto. Remember, they hand him the scroll, he finds the place he's looking for, and he reads and he says, "This has been fulfilled in your hearing," and they're amazed at his words and his grace, but he's actually claiming to be the Messiah. Well, I'd like to read these seven verses from Isaiah 61, and I think you'll see how they are behind the Beatitudes, or at least several of the Beatitudes. Here goes. "The Spirit of the Lord God is upon me, because the Lord has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, and the opening of the prison to those who are bound, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn, to grant to those who mourn in Zion, to give them a beautiful headdress instead of ashes, the oil of gladness instead of mourning, the garment of praise instead of a faint spirit, that they may be called oaks of righteousness, the planting of the Lord, that he may be glorified. They shall build up the ancient ruins. They shall raise up the former devastations. They shall repair the ruined cities, the devastations of many generations. Strangers shall stand and tend your flocks. Foreigners shall be your plowmen and vine dressers, but you shall be called the priests of the Lord. They shall speak of you as the ministers of our God. You shall eat the wealth of the nations, and in their glory you shall boast. Instead of your shame, there shall be a double portion. Instead of dishonor, they shall rejoice in their lot. Therefore, in their land, they shall possess a double portion. They shall have everlasting joy." Now, it refers to the Jews coming back from captivity, from the reversal, from sadness and devastation to newness and joy. And it's a wonderful passage. Many Christians read, many Jews, lots of people read the end of the book of Isaiah, particularly chapters 40 to 66. There's so much that's inspiring there. So many things are alluded to in the New Testament. In fact, all the way to the book of Revelation, you'll find references to this section. Well, maybe you noticed, he says, "I've come to bring good news to the poor, and to comfort all who mourn." And that ties in nicely with our first two Beatitudes. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn. Now, let me say this. The word blessed doesn't really have a lot of meaning today. Not as it did once upon a time. Even I know religious people often say blessings, or they sign off their emails blessings. It's almost saccharine. Happy, which is the way some Bibles render this word, doesn't quite do it. I think because we associate happiness with emotion, whereas originally I think happiness was connected with your situation. You know, fortunate might be a good way to render this. Like just render it. Fortunate are the poor in spirit. Fortunate are those who mourn. You'd say, well, why are they fortunate? Why is their lot any better than anyone else's? Well, so there are different ways we could look at the Beatitudes. But beatitude is from a Latin word, beatitudo, which means a blessing. And beatus is a Latin word for blessing. So in the Middle Ages, you've got the Catholic Church with its Latin Bibles. The original is not Latin, right? It's Hebrew and Greek. But they've got Latin Bibles, and that's where this word comes from, beatitude, which is not a word you hear outside of church. At least I don't. Well, let's dig behind the meaning of this first one, and that's our purpose today. In the book of Proverbs, there is a verse that I think can help us. It is better to be of a lowly spirit with the poor than to divide the spoil with the proud. That's Proverbs 16:19. Actually, that comes right after the famous proverb, you know, pride goes before a fall. So we have that contrast between the poor who are lowly, who are humble. You can give them input. Then you've got the proud, the people who want to take. It's all about them. I think this shows us that the kind of poverty of spirit we're looking for here is when we're not full of ourselves. I don't think he's necessarily talking about people who are crushed, who have zero hope, who are living in total despair. Maybe you could make that argument, but I think it's more the absence of pride. It's that openness to possibilities. And we know that it's not the same thing necessarily as being poor. Poor is not always a blessing. There are lots of materialistic poor people, probably fewer rich people who are not materialistic, but it's hard to say that one size fits all. Many poor people struggle with the same things that rich people struggle with. It's more dangerous to be rich, biblically. Possessions are dangerous, and if we're not careful, they can end up possessing us. Well, let's look at another passage, and this is just a few verses after the Isaiah quote that I read. And I love this one because it's talking about the kind of person the Lord's looking for, one who is poor and of a contrite spirit and trembles at my word. So being poor in spirit means that we have a fear of God, a fear of his word. It doesn't just bounce off us. We're pliable, moldable. We're, again, open to new ideas. We don't insist on holding on to our own thoughts. I think that could be very helpful there. And if we're ever unsure of what Jesus meant by something, we could always ask, well, what does this look like in Jesus' life? Was Jesus poor in spirit? Now, of course, he was overflowing with spirit and true character. But how did he actually live his life? Well, he became impoverished, leaving heaven for earth, being born into a simple family. He sets aside heavenly privileges. He doesn't have many possessions. He goes down even lower than just from heaven to earth. During that Last Supper, he gets down on his knees and he washes his disciples' feet, something that, well, that's something a slave was supposed to do. Servants wash the feet, maybe, or you wash your own feet. But for Jesus, as the master, to humble himself, to take that position of a servant, as that beautiful poem or hymn in Philippians chapter 2 discusses, I think that explains what being poor in spirit is. We need to be like Jesus. He's human, but actually just a little lower than the angels. that he is willing to become poor, even though he's rich, as Paul says in 2 Corinthians. All right. So if that's the, if we're on the right track there, then it's something that we should strive to be. We should strive to be poor in spirit. Not poor in understanding, not poor in humility, poor in spirit. The kind of spirit that you would have, say, in a spirited horse, a stallion that's not been broken, that cannot be tamed. We need to let go. Now, the blessings of these Beatitudes, you know, blessed are the poor in spirit. The blessings don't always come immediately. And we're going to talk about that more in our next Beatitude, our next lesson. But just keep that in mind. Just because you're blessed doesn't mean you get the object of the blessing, what you long for, right away. It may take a while. So a little bit of application. Titus 3:2, a verse that I've shared recently has hit me quite hard, where we're told to speak evil of no one, to avoid quarreling, to be gentle, and to show perfect courtesy toward all people. It hits me because sometimes I rush, I'm impatient, and I can be rude, not show courtesy. Now, when I realize I've been too hard on someone or I've been too blunt, it started to hurt me. I think that's a good thing. It's very easy for me, for example, to point out someone's mistake instead of to cover it over, which is what love should do. I'm thinking of an incident that happened just 4 or 5 days ago. And to be poor in spirit, something I strive for, to be gentle, not to need to control every situation. You know, I value information, but wanting timely information can easily become wanting to be in charge, be in control. I think this is especially important for those who influence others. If you're in leadership, in leadership, we need to be the kind of people who are described in the Beatitudes, poor in spirit, hungering, thirsting for righteousness, and many more things. Really, we need to be looking to the Lord and not be full of ourselves. Well, in our next talk, we'll look at the second Beatitude, blessed are those who mourn. Thanks for listening. Keep this in your heart today, and I hope that this will be a blessing, just meditating on Matthew 5:3. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven.